I am Planta on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Nettie Wilde joins me now. Her film, A Place Called Chiapas, will be screened at Doxa, the Documentary Film Festival, Saturday the 4th of May. It'll be at the Van City Theatre at 4:15 p.m., and after the film, there will be a discussion about the movie, 21 years after its release and 25 years after the Zapatista National Liberation Army's rebellion in the southern state of Chiapas, Mexico. Ms. Wilde and her Canadian-Mexican crew were in the region for about 9 months, capturing what life was like as the mysterious subcomandante Marcos led an indigenous guerrilla force seizing land from landowners and the Mexican government. It was considered the world's first postmodern revolution in 1994 using the internet. It's sometimes tense, but the film is eventually revealing not only of the oppressed and the oppressors and their odd relationship with reality. The film got good notices on its release. Variety noted the movie's success in illuminating the murky politics of the situation. We'll also reflect on what precipitated all of this NAFTA and where we see this hemisphere today with a new version of the trade agreement. The film won the 1999 Genie Award for Best Documentary Feature. Nettie Wilde is a distinguished filmmaker of movies such as A Rustling of Leaves, Blockade, Fix, The Story of an Addicted City, and Conalina, Land Beautiful. She's won many awards for her work and much-deserved recognition for her career. Visit CanadaWildProductions.com for more information, and visit doxafestival.ca for tickets to the screening. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Nettie Wilde. Ms. Wilde, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
So was it in 1997 when you began working on this movie?
Yeah, we actually shot in 96, 97.
I see.
Which was 2 years after that initial uprising, but there was still a lot of very, very high-stakes activity happening.
Yeah, and when you began shooting, talking to Subcomandante Marcos, was that, I guess, did you always wanted to do that, and I guess did you make a request to talk to him right away?
Yeah, it was difficult because, of course, initially when I went down, I was very pulled down by the Zapatista story and by the story of this mestizo, this mm-hmm. white guy who came down from the city, very much an urban man who integrated along with other urban Mexicans with the indigenous people. Mm-hmm. And this curious alchemy arose out of that, which was the Zapatista uprising. It was very much driven by the indigenous people, but it also had this undertow of urban Mexicans who wanted to bring about change in Mexico. And Marcos, of course, was really center to that because he was such an extraordinary storyteller. He was a military strategist. He was a poet. He was all these things.
Yeah.
So originally, I had very much, right from the get-go, wanted to connect with him, but it proved to be very, very difficult. And he kept putting me on hold for that interview mm-hmm. and kept encouraging me to go to the north, outside of the official conflict zone, and I was reticent to do that. And the reason for that was that it was very complicated, it was a very complex situation for me to get my Canadian head around.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of went, oh, you know what? I just want to stick close here where the Zapatistas are facing off with the Mexican military. And Marcos, through his handlers, was sending me outside of the territory, outside of the conflict zone, uh-huh. to people who were not so much dealing with the Mexican military, but were dealing with paramilitary who were killing them for supporting the Zapatistas. So it was not until we went to the north
uh-huh.
and we filmed what was happening there and we ran into a really big complication, and that was that the people in the north were saying, where the heck are the Zapatistas?
Yeah.
We're dying up here, and we need protection. And so I had to go back then down to Marcos and the Zapatistas and say, not only do I still want that interview, but now the film we're making is asking a very big, uncomfortable question.
Mm.
And that's, how can the revolution be there for people who support them outside of your sphere of influence, you know, which is it's a big, tough question for any revolutionary movement. You know, it's the ultimate question. And that proved to be a question that Marcos was not eager to answer.
Yeah, I guess early on in the film, you asked the question, you know, you posed this challenge between, say, the rhetoric of a revolution and how different it is from the reality. As a filmmaker, what's that like to capture when you see this? I don't know if you expected it, say, but when you do encounter it, because then it becomes such an important part of the film and what it is you're documenting, say.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is that the film starts to tell you what it needs to know. It starts to tell you the questions to ask. And sometimes those questions are pretty darn uncomfortable. So I can tell you it's a very lonely place to be, because the last thing in the world I wanted to do was alienate Su Comandante Marcos. And yet, the film was demanding that I ask a question that he didn't want to particularly answer. So it was a lonely place. But I had to do it. You know, I believe very, very strongly that when you are taking a movement like that seriously, you are not doing anybody any favors by making a puff piece, by making a piece of propaganda.
Mm.
And that it's in, if you're taking it seriously, then you have to look at those contradictions. Because at the end of the day, I really, really wanted people outside of the very close cluster of solidarity groups. I wanted ordinary Canadians and Americans and people, and Mexicans for that matter, to really, really listen up and take this story really seriously. Because the stakes were very, very high for the communities that were supporting the Zapatistas. And I thought, you know, we had to dance. It was really interesting because, you know, Marcos was and is known for somebody who embraces the contradictions. He just didn't want to embrace his own.
And
So it was really a struggle.
There are people listening who probably haven't seen the film yet, even though it's been out for 21 years. The interview with Marcos, though, that we see near the end of the film, it seems to come together quite suddenly. What was going on?
He arrived in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and so
which had difficulties because, you know, I had sent word and said, you know, if we're coming to you or if you're coming to us, we need light.
Mm.
And two things happened. One, it was dark out. And two, the Zapatistas had asked to use our lights for a dance they were putting on that night. So we didn't have our lights. And then Marcos showed up on horseback with all his outriders. And it was very interesting. I think he chose it for a number of reasons. I think he chose it because he knew we were going to be in a difficult situation and he was grumpy about doing the interview and he was going to make us work. And I think on a more profound level, he came on the night of the Day of the Dead.
Mm.
And it provided us with an extraordinary context for that interview because, you know, he is a poet. He's a storyteller. And so when we entered into the interview, to be honest, the beginning of it was very awkward, very, very difficult. We were scrambling like crazy with gas lamps to light him properly.
Uh-huh.
And he was, you know, he and I had kind of had this political dogfight. And so that he was answering the questions all right, but they I could tell they were going to end up on the cutting room floor. They just didn't have the poetic storytelling that I knew would reach out to people who ordinarily don't listen to this stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And so finally I just kind of threw my political questions on the floor and I just looked at him and I said, what was it like for you as a urban Mexican to go up into the mountains? And he paused and then he launched into this whole extraordinary tale of what it was like for him to eat bugs and be frightened and to be taken in by the indigenous people and then to embrace, like them, death as a companion at the dinner table.
Mm.
And I knew at that point that, you know, we had entered into a storytelling. He was using a voice that would connect with people who would ordinarily really balk at listening to a guy who's sitting there in at night with a mask,
right,
holding an N16, right?
Yeah.
And we had it. And he went to this human place because he was talking about himself. And it meant something, and it resonated, and we had a universal story, you know.
Yeah. But by the way, I read somewhere the film was screened in Mexico recently and for the first time in Spanish, I understand?
Yeah, so here, this is what's really important and why we're doing the screening right now.
Uh-huh.
And that's because, you know, we filmed that film 23 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And the reason it's coming out now is because it's we're coming up to the 25th anniversary of the uprising.
Right.
And as a part of that, we have repatriated all the footage that we shot for a place called Chiapas. That's over 50 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And we've taken it back down to Mexico, and we're working with the Autonomous University of Mexico City, UNAM, which is probably the biggest university in Latin America, and they have a terrific archive.
Uh-huh.
And they are restoring not just the film, they're digitizing the film and they're releasing it, a Spanish version, to coordinate with the anniversary. But even more significantly, they're digitizing every single roll that we shot, 264 rolls of film, and they're going to create a very deep archive about a place called Chiapas, because this is a huge chapter in Mexican history.
Yeah.
It's really recent, and through all sorts of very bizarre circumstances, my Mexican-Canadian crew was able to gain access that other Mexicans who had been covering this very complex story couldn't, because their lives were on the line. So we were able to slide in there because I was Canadian, I was from the free trade partner, I was a woman and nobody took me seriously. That was a big part of it.
Uh-huh.
And I was able to get our crews past the checkpoints, past the military, and I was able to, with huge help from the Mexican members of my crew and also terrific Mexican journalists who quite simply could not go where we were going because they'd be killed. And they were helping us understand and who to talk to, and they were helping us understand our own footage when we'd shot it.
Mm.
It was really extraordinary. And so we have, and because I was really intent on not making an activist solidarity film, because in its language and form, if you understand what I'm saying.
Right,
I mean,
right.
it was about activists, but it was really important that we get a grip on the ranchers, for instance, whose land the Zapatistas seize.
Right.
And it was really important to talk to those finqueros who had owned and controlled indigenous lives for so many generations. And it was really important for us to follow the bishop, and who played such a key role, and also the paramilitaries who, when we filmed them, these are the people who were throwing Zapatistas villagers out of their own villages. It's a very brutal scene where you have family pitched against family, basically.
Yeah.
And these people on camera were very, they were civil to me. And then I put down the camera, and they threatened to kill my Mexican sound man.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was really important that we go to whatever limits that it took to try and get the different pieces of this very complex story, understanding completely that it was always through these outside eyes. You know, if a Mexican had made that film, it would be a very different film.
Yeah.
But because of this interesting team that we put together, which was half Mexican and half Canadian, we just managed to get something that the Mexicans recognize now is something they want. It's something they need to know. And so it's very exhilarating right now, because a place called Chiapas, the movie,
uh-huh.
is playing in Mexican cinemas in Spanish, and a place called Chiapas, the archive, which if you think about it, you know, we shot Subcabadante Marcos, for instance, for just under an hour, and we end up using 3 minutes.
Right.
So we have the entire interview. We have days and days of stuff of following the military and the paramilitary and people working out in the fields. And, you know, it's a very, very full 1 year of filming.
Yeah.
So that's what's exciting. That's why DOXA is focusing on this. And we're going to have a discussion afterwards that's going to include myself, my producer, Betsy Carson,
mm-hmm.
and also the head of the archive at UNAM. He's going to be Skyping in, and we're going to be talking with lawyer Martha Rands about what happens to copyright, what happens to authorship when you do something like repatriate the story.
Yeah.
That was made by me, a Canadian, but now is going home. You know, it's complicated. It's exciting. It's that the folks in the at the Filmoteca at UNAM are a delight to work with because they're so excited about the footage.
Yeah. The other thing
you can imagine, yeah. we're kind of looking at these rolls as we're digitizing them, and for me, it's like I'm going back 23 years, right?
Yeah, right.
I'm looking at it, and I to be really honest, I together with the Mexicans are really stunned that we got any of it, let alone 50 hours, you know?
Yeah. Well, as I'm watching the film in 2019, you mentioned, you know, it's about 20 years since the film came out and 25 years since the revolution.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, NAFTA, that's since been replaced recently.
Uh-huh.
You're watching the film with a sense that a lot has changed. I mean, we're not using dial-up anymore, for example.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, there are lessons from this film that people who watch it today can glean is something important, can't they?
Well, one of the things that Mexicans tell me is they look at it and they go, we never knew this was going on.
Mm.
This is, it feels contemporary to them. It's news. First of all, they never knew it was going on 23 years ago. And secondly, the paramilitary activity is full on in Mexico. So it's like we've been able to peel the onion layers back on a particular story that happened 23 years ago, but it's universal in terms of what's happening all throughout Mexico.
Right.
So, you know, the good news is also sad news, and that's that our film doesn't feel historical to Mexicans.
Mm.
It feels like when I was down there, you know, there was paramilitary activity throwing people who are, you know, fighting for a more democratic Mexico out of their villages. It was the whole shebang was all there, tied very closely to, you know, government and Mexican military, and, you know, I just, all the complexity was all there still. So, you know, it makes a place called Chiapas incredibly relevant.
Right.
Yeah, and I think the fact that we dug into those contradictions allows it to really resonate 23 years later.
Yeah.
It's not just a rah-rah piece about the Zapatistas, which would have made it feel much more dated,
right.
You know. Instead, people are going, holy, that happened then. And the other thing that's really interesting is a lot of Mexicans, young Mexicans who are, you know, just kind of coming into their kind of politically aware lives, people who are like 19, 20, 21, they weren't even alive when the uprising happened.
Yeah.
And so here it is, and they get to feel it and see it in a way. And, you know, I try to be very honest in the film, and I voice it. It's narrated by me in English, and then Ofelia Medina, who's one of the big movie stars of Mexico, plays me and does my narration for me. But the point of view is that of an outsider trying to understand what is happening in Mexico. Are, you know, yes, it's a free trade partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I opened by saying we debated it in Canada, and in Mexico they went to war over it. You know,
yeah.
And just trying to also come to terms with understanding a little bit of Mexico, which I think is so very important. We share this tectonic plate with Mexico,
yeah.
And their Mexicans are the only ones in the world who understand what it's like to live next to the United States.
Yeah.
You know, we share a history and a continent, and it's really, I think, important for Canadians to know how extraordinary Mexico is, and also what an extraordinary trouble Mexico was in and still is.
Just before we started talking today, Nettie, I mentioned to you what an admirer I have been of your work over the years. A Rustling of Leaves was something that we watched at our house as I was growing up, because my parents are Filipino, and then of course Fix.
Uh-huh.
You know, everybody in this town saw that when that came out. When you look back at your career, the time in Chiapas, I mean, does that stand out, say, more than, say, other projects that you've done?
No, it doesn't. And I say that with real pride, because every film I've made has been a huge journey. It takes me between 5 and 7 years to make one movie.
Mm.
And so that's a chunk of time. And it's a big learning. So when I was in the Philippines, boy, that was a real shapeshifter. That was an amazing story for me to follow. Very, very unique. When I was up north with the Gixan and made Blockade,
right.
That really defined how I looked at my own country. When I went to Chiapas, it combined, you know, the armed revolution that I had filmed in the Philippines with indigenous issues in Canada, only it all took place in Mexico. Then I came home to my own backyard, and it was blowing up with the whole drug crisis, and
yeah.
that's what Six came out of. So each one of those are really big chapters, and it continues. You know, the we've just finished two huge projects. One on the fish migration, which uh-huh. resulted in a very big a cinematic spectacle that we projected onto the Canby Street Bridge. That took 7 years to make, you know. And we just finished Conalina, Our Land Beautiful, which was shot up in Tahltan territory. And again, that's another five-year project. These are all really, really big. But I guess the thing that's wonderful about all of them is I leave a piece of my heart in all those territories. And certainly Mexico has, you know, claimed a real part of my heart, and I'll carry it with me forever, right yeah. next to the Philippines.
yeah, it's such a good movie. It is absolutely worth seeing again, and I urge people to go down to Doxa on May 4th. Nettie, it's been such a pleasure to speak with you today and to look back at this important place and time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thank you for your attention to it. And yes, I'm so glad you took another look at it. And we're going to have a very extraordinary screening at Doxa and a really interesting discussion afterwards. It's going to be pretty darn lively, so I encourage people to come down too.
Indeed. A Place Called Chiapas will be screened at Doxa Saturday, the 4th of May, 2019, at the Van City Theater. That's at 4:15 p.m. Visit doxafestival.ca for tickets, and, of course, canadawildproductions.com. Nettie Wild, join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.